Hello and welcome to Car Talk on National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and we're broadcasting this week again from the Tax Preparation Office here at Car Talk Plaza.
This is really getting me a problem. Our staff tax advisor loophole is on our case again. What the hell is
Tell me get a life, will you?
Well, last week, as you all may remember, he was all over us like a cheap suit because you were trying to deduct $5,000 in poker losses under the heading Employee Evaluation Meeting.
It's worth a shot, wasn't it?
How you doing? Good, yeah. And now I have another nasty memo from this guy, Paul. All right, you ready for this?
Yeah, of course.
Dear boys, that would be us, I refer you to Section 1056-42B of the Federal Tax Code. I quote, Line 42C shall consist of only those items specifically excluded from both lines 42B and 39A and not specifically sanctioned for exclusion or deduction on lines 15, 16, 18, or 21 of Form 10-56. Crazy?
I got it. I'm with you.
Furthermore, no items on line 42C shall be deemed allowable if the sum total of deductions listed on line 42C shall be equal to or greater, let me turn the page here, long memo, than the sum of lines 38 and 39 or the hypotenuse of the triangle formed when you connect the end of lines 39 and 40 to the signature box, whichever is greater.
What does it mean, man? What does it mean?
It means, Raymond, you cannot deduct Chinese food as a language skill enhancement.
Oh, I was afraid of this.
I also, he goes on, I also have serious questions about the following items. The renovation of Tom's master bathroom under the heading Home Office Deduction. He's in his office as a euphemism and not allowable under Section
6. See, I told you, man.
Every time you call me, what does my wife say? He's in his office.
And I call the other number and I get the machine. No, no, he's in his other office.
Okay, Raymond's deduction of his video rentals. Please note, Ray, that the interest line is for interest paid to you, not for money you spent on your interests.
A little slight misinterpretation.
Tom, 25 boxes of Romeo and Juliet Cubano cigars will probably not slide by as business creativity tools. Hey, if it works... And Raymond, that $2,500 charitable contribution to Vista sounded good until I realized it was not Volunteers in Service to America, V-I-S-T-A, but your Dodge Colt Vista. Disallowed! I'll get back to you again as soon as I've had a chance to review the rest of your return. Sincerely yours, Lou Pohl, Tax Advisor.
Oh, I knew he was going to be a pain in the butt. We got to get rid of him,
get
man.
Get rid of him. Who the heck?
Anyway, if you'd like to talk to us, our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi.
Hi. Who's this?
Sydney from Los Angeles.
Sydney. Is the second letter an I or a Y?
It's a Y. It's just like Australia.
So anyway, Sydney, what's up?
I've got a 1989 Mitsubishi Montero. And it has this squeak, which sounds kind of like,
Oh,
excellent.
Wow, that's great.
Isn't that nice?
Yes.
Wow.
And when I make a right or left-hand turn, it goes like that.
Really?
Well, but
yeah.
If you're driving straight ahead, at what speed? All speeds?
All speeds.
It makes the first noise. Do it again. It was great.
Oh, you know, this sounds just like the donkey that I rode down to the bottom of Grand Canyon.
Yeah. As you speed up, does this happen faster?
No.
No?
No.
There goes two ideas.
And when it's parked and I get out of it, it goes...
Oh.
Oh. Fortunately, you just gave it away.
I was thinking maybe I needed to lose weight, and that had something to do with it.
We were going
to
discuss that with you. Privately, of course.
Well, you have either...
Yeah, go ahead.
A control arm bushing that is badly in need of lubrication.
Yeah.
Or worse than that, a ball joint or tie rod end that's in a similar condition.
Yeah. Worse meaning more dangerous.
Now, if it's a control arm bushing, you're unlikely to lose a wheel. But if it's a ball joint or tie rod end...
Goodbye. Sydney.
This time next week, we could be reminiscing about you.
Most people are reminiscing about me.
So I think you need to get it checked, and it ought to be very, very easy.
Mm-hmm.
Do the noise again. That was great.
It was really good.
Okay, which one do you want?
The first one.
I can't do it.
Oh.
You're a poor second.
Rank amateur.
Rank amateur. Sydney.
Rank amateur. Well, she's been listening to it for weeks.
What's happening is as the vehicle bounces up and down on the road as you drive, either the control arm bushings or a ball joint or a tie rod end is moving, obviously. And it's either worn out, broken, or whatever, or just simply needing lubrication.
Has the vehicle sat for a long period of time without being driven?
Yes.
Ha-ha!
And then?
Boy, now, if I had asked that question first,
then you'd have looked good.
I could have looked smart.
Yeah, but you didn't.
Yeah. And I think what did it is moisture got in there. Although I understand there's not much moisture in Los Angeles, but whatever. I think moisture got into one of the control arm bushings and it rusted it. Mm-hmm. And it may be that you have to replace it. But sometimes there are penetrating lubricants that can free this up and make the noise go away.
Yeah. I mean, the way they'll find it is one guy will get underneath the vehicle and someone else will, a big, heavy 300-pound guy, will bounce up and down on the fender. And the guy underneath will listen. And you can actually feel where it's coming from. And they'll know in 2 minutes where it is, and they'll get the juice out of the can, and they'll start squirting everything, and it'll be gone. So this is trivial, Sydney. Trivial.
But get it looked at soon, because it could be dangerous.
I mean, trivial to find. If it were a bad ball joint, the wheel could fall off. So that's not trivial.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll have it looked at, because it really could be dangerous, and we can't afford to lose any listeners. You're 16% of our total listening audience. That's a lot.
I feel so privileged.
You are.
You are. Can you do the noise one more time?
Okay, one more time.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's perfect, too, isn't it?
It is.
It's absolutely perfect.
See you, Sydney.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling. Bye. 1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Jack Dalton from Florham Park, New Jersey.
Florham.
Florham.
Florham, yeah.
Yes.
Sure, I've been there.
Have you really?
Yeah. No, he's never been there.
I've been there.
Is there a state prison there?
No, no.
No,
that's Folsom.
Oh, that's Folsom.
You're in the wrong state.
Isn't Florham Park on the way to Princeton?
It depends.
Depends where you're coming from. Like, from
if I were coming from Ohio.
Like from the Atlantic Ocean, maybe?
If I were coming from, like, Ohio, would Florham Park be near Princeton?
It's about 70 miles from Princeton.
So what is this? Geography talk? What's up, Jack?
Well, you know, New Jersey's the Garden State, and I got a car that thinks it's from Wisconsin, the Dairy State.
Yeah.
Yeah, I check my oil because I got 103,000 miles on it, and I open the filler cap, and it's full of cheese.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Is it really?
Well, no, not really.
Oh, okay.
It may not be a devastating thing, but it's unfortunate.
Well, it's a little disconcerting to take that cap off and say, what is? And it is kind of disgusting-looking, amorphous kind of.
Yeah, like curds and whey.
Yeah, well, it looks like tofu.
More like American cheese, yellow.
Yeah.
Yeah. The stuff that's in the spray can.
You're right.
Right? Spray cheese, in case you wanted to put it in your hair or something. What is this car, anyway?
It's a VW Fox.
And you don't drive it very much anymore.
Yeah, I do.
You do?
Back and forth to work or just short trips.
Yeah.
Right. Well, what's in the oil, I mean, it could be bad news, but more likely than not, it's just water vapor that's in the oil.
Well, how does water vapor get in the oil? From lack of use?
Well, not lack of use so much, but water vapor is one of the products of combustion. Every time you combust a hydrocarbon, you get carbon dioxide and water as the two primary ingredients, and then a bunch of other stuff.
And some of that water sneaks down into the crankcase.
Right.
Normally, when you get the engine hot, that water evaporates. But if you take short trips and the water doesn't get a chance to heat up and evaporate...
You are making more water every time you drive it than you can ask the system to dissipate.
That sounds like my system.
It is.
Yeah.
No, my...
Oh,
my
body. Your body system.
I'm making more water than I'm even trying.
Yeah. So if you take a lot of short trips, you end up with water in the oil.
Uh-huh.
And the water in the oil turns this milky-looking, funny color.
Right. Well, what's the worst case scenario?
You really want to know? The worst case scenario is the water is getting in through a breach in the cooling system. Somehow a gasket is cracked, or there's a crack in the cylinder head or the block, and coolant and water are getting in the oil, and causing this condition.
Uh huh.
Now, if you really had that condition, you'd be losing coolant, number one. Number two, the whole dipstick would be covered with it. So when you pull the dipstick out or drain the oil, all of the oil would be kind of milky.
No, it's not. But if you're just, because I change the oil every 3,000 miles.
If you're just getting it on the cap, I don't think I'd worry about it.
Oh, that's wonderful.
If you decided to take this thing out every week and drive it 100 miles on the highway.
Right.
You would push all that water out of the system.
Right. And you'd blow the engine.
And if I do have a leak somewhere, what's
oh, don't even think about it.
Don't
okay.
even think. No. Just keep changing the oil every 3,000.
Okay.
Actually, switch to 5. 3,000 is too often.
All right.
5 is good enough.
5 is good.
And when you get to 150, stop altogether. See you later, Jack.
Good talking to you. Bye-bye.
Same here. Bye-bye. 1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello. You're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Johanna from Durango, Colorado.
Hi, Johanna.
Johanna.
Hi.
Durango. What a romantic.
What does it mean, Durango?
What does it mean?
I don't know what it means, but I know how to say it.
Is it Durango? Is it
Durango.
A Spanish? It must be a Spanish word, eh?
Si,
no,
yes.
It's Lithuanian, man.
Durango.
I
mean, it's a great word.
Yeah, I think it means place of the great train robbery.
You know, I remember now when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
There used to be a cowboy named the Durango Kid.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, now this wasn't a TV cowboy. This was a real cowboy.
And this wasn't on TV.
No.
There wasn't no TV.
No, hardly.
Back in '06.
Anyway, Johanna from Durango, what can we do for you?
Well, this is the situation. In a couple of months, I will be moving into a teepee. And it's out of about 20 miles outside of town, and it's down a road that is entirely clay, no gravel, no rocks, no nothing.
Is this a split-level teepee, or is it just the
no,
one level?
No, it's just one-level teepee.
Does it have a garage?
No garage.
No garage.
Yeah, and so this is the situation. We're going to be having spring runoff when I move in, and this road turns to soup and pretty much consumes your car when that happens.
So you're going to drive your car. You want to get back to nature, so you're going to drive your car to this teepee.
Well, yeah, it's about 5 miles off the road. It's a long walk, but that's my problem. I want to make sure that my car is really suitable for this, and if it's not, if there's anything I can do to make it better.
The hell with the car. Well, I mean, if it's going to float your car away, is it going to float you away too?
Well, I hope not.
Well, but more importantly, I mean, forget the car. We'll figure out what to do with that momentarily. Why are you doing this? I mean, Native American?
Well, no, I'm a college student. There's a college here in Durango called Fort Lewis. And because of numerous reasons...
This is a course you're taking.
No. There's a serious housing shortage in Durango. And so many people have turned to this option for living arrangements.
So there's a housing shortage at the school?
Well, in the whole town, really. Affordable housing, yeah.
And so you've decided to move into a teepee?
Yes.
With your boyfriend?
Yes.
Oh, that's what I thought.
Ah.
I mean, why else would you move into a teepee?
Sounds better already.
Your parents know about this?
Yes.
Okay, just checking. I mean, as a parent myself, you know, I would ask these important, embarrassing questions.
Right.
So I think it's only fair that, you know, I
ask. My mom's very supportive.
She is.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
Good. Okay, so you and Chuck.
Chip.
Chip. You and Chip are going to be moving into the teepee in a couple of months.
Uh-huh.
And you're worried that when the spring floods come.
Uh-huh.
What?
I'm just worried what's going to happen to my car. And so I was wondering if maybe I should get special tires or something to help this car along.
Do you have a television in this teepee?
No.
What are you going to do at night?
Read books.
Okay. There are lights in the teepee.
Shortwave.
Well, lanterns.
Shortwave portable radio.
Right.
Okay. What kind of a car do you have?
I have a Subaru Legacy station wagon with all-wheel drive.
Good.
Now, that's a good start.
Yeah.
Good. What you need is 4 of those really knobby mud and snow tires.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have those already?
No.
You're going to need them.
You'll have those. You have to get those.
Because when the road washes out, which it will.
But will the road simply wash out, or will, I mean, is it a flood?
When the spring runoff happens here, everything just gets completely sopped, and it's going to turn into a big bog.
But what's going to happen to the teepee?
Well, the teepee will be okay. It's all sealed up.
Yeah, and it's on the high ground. I mean, you don't put your teepee down in the gully.
Right.
So they did. They used to.
You don't?
No, you go for the high ground.
You know that I'm not an outdoorsy kind of guy.
Oh, yes, we know that. We know that. The most outdoors my brother gets is a sidewalk cafe. That's about as outdoorsy as he gets.
I love the outdoors. Well, yeah, so all you're worried about is getting to and from the teepee, but the teepee will be safe.
Yes.
That's it. Four tires.
That's all I need to do is get those great tires.
That's what I would do.
And super.
There will probably be a couple of days where you will be trapped in your teepee and you won't be able to go anyplace.
And that will be awful.
Right.
That'll be awful.
Make sure I have a pair of hip waders.
Yeah,
sure.
And you and Chip will have to make the most of it. So have a wonderful time.
This is great.
So how many weeks are you going to be in the teepee? The whole semester?
I'm going to be in it all summer. Till August.
Till August.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, send us a postcard with a picture of you and Chip in front of the teepee.
Well, I will. Thanks for your help.
And on the postcard, let us know what Durango means.
Okay.
Thanks, Johanna.
Thanks a lot, guys.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, tell me quick, what was last week's puzzler?
Last week's puzzler had to do with the Cadillac, Minnesota. The battery died.
No, your battery's dying. No, it's a tale of two Camrys.
It was the best of Camrys. It was the worst of Camrys.
And I'll have the answer in just a minute. 1970 Red Chevelle. Fire engine hot, I'm going to sell. I'm gonna get rich, I'm gonna be a millionaire. Deep bucket seats, black long on top. We're rolling down the street, I'm ready to pop. Seen a day since 1982, been tucked away 100 miles an hour. Oh man, this boy is fast.
And even though the NPR board passes the family-sized bottle of Tylenol whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR. Hey, if you'd like to hear more car talk.
Yeah, like if you're a teacher with a class of really rotten students you want to punish.
You can download hundreds of classic Car Talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says, listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the answer to last week's puzzler. Here it is.
First question.
Minnesota.
What was it about?
I don't remember. The other day in the shop, I had two Toyota Camrys side by each, as they say in Canada.
Yeah.
One of them, Camry 1, wouldn't run at all. We had to push it in. You know, it was one of these, you turn the key, and it would crank, but it wouldn't fire up. The other Camry, Camry B, was in for a simple emissions test. I guess the guy was going for a state inspection sticker, and he wanted us to verify that his emissions are okay. So I say to Ralph, Ralphie boy, take care of these two Camrys.
Yeah.
So he takes the emissions tester probe, and he sticks it into the tailpipe of Camry B. That's the car that's in for the emissions test. So far, so good, right?
Yeah.
Then he opens the hood. And the next thing I know, he's cranking the car, and now Camry B won't start.
Oh.
So then he takes the probe from Camry B, puts it in the tailpipe of Camry number one, the one that didn't start. And he turns the key. And for a minute or so, or 30 seconds, he cranks it. But that one, of course, doesn't start because it doesn't start.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering what kind of nonsense he's up to. I mean, I assigned him these two cars. You figure out why this one doesn't start and do the emissions test on this one. And he's goofing off.
Yeah.
So I ask him what he's doing, and he tells me what he's doing. And I say to him, Ralph, you're a genius. First I said, you're fired. I think those are the first words out of my mouth.
And then you said, you're a genius.
What was he up to? Well, he knew that the first Camry, the one that came in for the emissions test, ran.
Yeah.
He sticks the probe in the tailpipe and opens the hood and disables the ignition system so that the car will not start. So now he basically has car number one like car number two, or car number B like car number one or two, or A or B or C. Got it?
Got it.
He turns the key, and he reads the emissions on the machine.
Yeah.
He reads it's got like 3,000 parts per million of unburned hydrocarbons, obviously, because it won't start,
It's
trying to start.
The stuff is going out the tailpipe.
The injectors are squirting fuel in. It's not getting combusted.
Oh, I've got it.
When he puts the probe in the other car's tailpipe.
Zero.
And he cranks it. He's looking to see if it has the same kind of emissions. If it does, then he knows that the fuel system is working. The pump's working. The injectors are firing off.
Right.
And if he sees that there are no emissions with the same cranking time, then he knows that it's a fuel system problem and not an electrical system problem. Pretty cute, huh?
So what did he find out?
I don't know. I fired it before he answered.
What? He's a genius, the guy.
He is. He's a bleeding genius.
He's a genius.
Who's our winner this week?
Our winner this week is Crispin Reedy. That happens to be a she. Crispin. Like the breakfast cereal that you ate.
Rice Krispies. Yeah.
And Crispin is from Richardson, Texas, and for having her correct answer chosen at random.
Like St. Crispin. The patron saint of shoemakers.
I didn't know that. But, I mean, that's why you get paid the big bucks, because you know stuff like that. All right, for having her answer chosen this week, Crispin gets a $25 gift certificate to the Car Talk Shameless Commerce Division, and you pick whatever Car Talk junk you want up to $25, and preferably more than $25, the remainder of which you'll have to pay for yourself. And then we'll make big profits.
Yeah, right.
And with those big profits, we will hire more and more people, and we will build an empire.
And we'll buy bigger and bigger boats.
Yippee!
Anyway, we'll have another new puzzler coming up in the third half of today's show, one from the series of the Matchstick Puzzlers.
The Matchstick Puzzler series. Yeah.
In the meantime, we'll take your calls at 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, my name is Sarah Nesbitt, and I'm calling from Hoboken, New Jersey.
Hi, Sarah.
How are you doing?
Is there an H in that, Sarah?
There is not.
So what's up, Sarah?
Well, I have a question more concerned with driving than with actual mechanical problems.
Oh, yeah, we love these.
Oh, you do? Okay, good.
Yeah.
Well, this time of year, every time of year, but I get in my little car and drive right through the Holland Tunnel into Manhattan and spend all day long driving around Manhattan. And I've noticed, especially at this time of year, all these mammoth potholes appearing.
Yeah.
Enormous potholes. Potholes big enough to swallow my Toyota.
Yeah.
But you never see large chunks of asphalt. What happens to all that asphalt? Where does it go?
Yeah.
You see boulders.
Well.
Yeah, you would think.
It's a little, years ago, there used to be a lot of grave robbing. Mm-hmm. And people would go and dig up cadavers, and maybe they still do.
What's this got to do with potholes?
Well, the potholes, people are under the misconception that potholes appear because of frost heaves or natural, phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
They happen from underneath?
No, they're not. From people come and dig out pieces of asphalt to do research, asphalt research.
So they come at night?
They come at night, they dig the hole, and then you come the next morning and say, gee, this hole wasn't here yesterday.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But I never realized that. You're really into the science stuff.
I am, yes. Yes, science
and
madness.
We're all agreed that your theory is crazy. Now, what happens is the potholes, like many things in life, occur a little at a time.
See, once that first...
Are you sure about that?
Yeah, that first layer of asphalt is broken through, that's it. They're done for.
Yeah, and what happens is every car that goes by takes a couple of grains of asphalt with it, and the next one takes a few more grains of asphalt with it, and pretty soon you've got a monstrous hole.
If you look from the point at which you first see that pothole and look on the side of the road for the next 2.2 miles, you will see an accretion of little pebbles, and those are what used to be where the pothole is.
Yeah, now, I have to bring up the obvious question, which is, if we can put a man on the moon, can we not figure out how to prevent the potholes that we have? And the answer, of course, is, of course, we can.
Yes.
But do you realize the politics of potholes?
I can imagine.
Do you realize how many guys who couldn't otherwise get jobs anywhere... except driving those trucks around.
I want that job. What a great job that
and
is.
And shoveling that hot top into the holes. They have to do that year after year after year after year. And if we somehow solve that problem... I mean, we have a road here in Boston, which a couple of years ago, they decided to close down half of it because it was so bad they couldn't fix it anymore. And they repaved and rebuilt the entire road. And 3 years later, it was just as bad as it was when they started. And you can't tell me that that's the best possible technology. The Roman roads are still in existence now. They were built 2,000 years ago. And we can't make a road last a few years.
Sad, isn't it?
And we don't even use those iron wheels that they use. We use rubber. Someone suggested we should make the roads out of rubber and make the tires out of asphalt.
That raises another question, though, because they're starting to now pave roads in Manhattan with, I think, bits of broken glass embedded in macadam, it looks like.
Yes.
Yes.
Does that last longer?
I don't know. Pretty soon we'll be using nails.
Then we'll have to go back to iron tires.
No, I think what they should do is grind up the cars that get junked. And incorporate those into the road surface.
No, not a bad idea.
Yeah, I mean, you could see your car as you went by. Hey, it's my old Studebaker.
They don't want a solution to this problem. There's no way to have a solution for politicians.
And there shouldn't be a solution. One of the problems with society, with our country today, is there are not enough jobs.
Of course.
Technology has swept away tens of thousands of jobs to the extent that we've created enormous social problems. And if we were to solve this pothole problem, it would create just another situation where we had more people unemployed.
It would be the downfall of this country.
It would be. This could be the straw that broke the camel's back.
You mean what's keeping us
potholes
floating here is potholes?
Right. The whole society, the whole economy is hinged on potholes.
That would be the last.
Yes, that would be the.
You
yes.
fix that and bingo.
The whole system would collapse.
The crash of 29.
Like a house of cards.
Basically, municipal planned obsolescence.
Yes.
My
yes.
God.
And we need it in other areas of endeavor. We need our planned obsolescence in everything. In everything.
You know what we need? Pyramids.
What?
We got to start building pyramids.
Well.
Maybe I can get a job doing that.
See you, Sarah.
Thanks
Thank
for calling,
you.
Sarah.
Bye-bye.
Hey, I have an interesting letter, actually. This is a little note from Millie Gresko of Richmond, Virginia. Dear Tom and Ray, I was just sitting down to my breakfast of oatmeal and milk with brown sugar this morning when the guy from Joplin, Missouri, called about his dog losing his cookies all over the dashboard of his truck.
I remember that call.
The dog got sick and barfed all over the truck. She says, please, you really do owe it to your listeners to screen these kinds of calls. After all, the leisurely late morning breakfast is an American tradition. After the busy work week, the pleasure of relaxing, listening to your show, or watching cartoons if you're among the intellectually challenged, and having a nice, unrushed meal is eagerly awaited. The visual and olfactory mental image of a large canine barfing all over the dash, not to mention his owner spelunking after the chunks, was a bit off-putting. Since I am a Car Talk fan, I still ate the oatmeal, but it did take the edge off my enjoyment.
And oatmeal will never taste quite the same.
Oatmeal will never be the same. We never thought of that, actually.
I did.
You did?
Yeah.
I mean, of course, she's right. We ought to screen such calls.
Hey, we did our best.
So in the future, when anyone calls, someone should ask, do you have any disgusting olfactory or visual images in your story?
And then put them right through.
Right through, right.
You remember, my brother sits around all day doing nothing but reading stuff
That's That's what I do.
So if you measure up to at least this standard, you can mail him something at Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Ma 02238. Or if you can't get to the postage meter because someone else in the office is hoarding it, you can always email us at cartalk.com. Now, if you'd rather use the phone and insult us personally, our number is 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Seth calling from the neighboring town of Watertown.
Seth.
Watertown, Massachusetts?
Watertown, Ma.
Yeah.
Yeah. Watertown is an interesting sort of, it's a unique sort of place. I haven't quite figured out Watertown yet.
Well, most people haven't, and that's why I kind of like it that way.
Yeah. It's sort of I don't know what it is.
Well, people go through it all the time, but seldom do they actually go to Watertown.
Yeah. That's good enough
for
me.
No one really knows what Watertown is. It's one of those towns that has no real character.
Or water.
Or even water.
I mean, you'd expect what? At least one lake.
It's got water. It's got the Charles River
flowing
through the middle of it.
I mean, Watertown, you expect to see a large body of water. Or
well,
preferably
we have the Charles.
Part of the town submerged.
You know, we're
like
right
that.
On the Charles, so
sure.
It's a breeze to get into town by boat or by car.
No,
or by
boat.
Bike, for that matter.
Yeah. Or swimming, for that matter.
So anyway, what's on your mind, Seth?
Well, either there's a fifth Newton's law that I don't know about, or...
Fifth? I thought there were only two.
I only knew two myself.
Well, I thought there were four.
What that goes up must have come down. Oh, that's Galileo.
Galileo. If you was a starter, you keep it going.
Right. Unless someone was to stop you.
So either that or we're in the realm of metaphysics.
Really?
Ah, metaphysics, perhaps.
Right. And I think you guys are pretty good at that.
We are.
I've been told by at least one person and many more that in the wintertime, when you're starting a car on a slippery surface, you'd be better off starting in second or third gear to minimize wheel slip.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the argument goes something like, well, the higher the gear, the lower the torque. Of course, by that logic, you'd start in fifth gear, and I think you'd probably go off the road. I mean, I don't have any belief in it. I'm wondering what you guys think.
You don't have any belief in Newton's five laws?
Well, the four laws, yes, but this last one...
Seriously, what are the four laws? Are there four?
Oh, boy.
Do you know them?
You put them on the spot now.
Well, I know a few.
He brought it up, not me.
Well, the lucky thing is I work with engineers. Bless their little souls.
they're black little souls.
That's right. But I ain't an engineer.
Oh, you're not. Okay.
All right, so we'll excuse you.
We'll look it up.
And we should know them, but we don't remember.
We are engineers, but we don't know them.
Yeah. So what do you think?
Oh, it's absolutely true. And the higher the gear that you start off in, the more likely it is that you'll get going if you're on a slippery surface. And yes, if you could do it in fifth gear, that would be best, except the car wouldn't go in fifth gear. The danger of all of this is that when you do this, obviously, you're wearing out the clutch somewhat.
Right.
Because it's taking a little bit more of clutch play to get the thing moving.
Well, there might be a point where it becomes ineffective to go to the higher gear. I think second or third gear might be about the limit.
Well, it's a function of the size of the engine, the size of the car.
And the revolutions, how fast you make the engine turn. I mean, ideally,
exactly.
You would like to start off, if you're in snow or ice, without stepping on the gas at all.
Right.
Because you want to...
And it seems to me to get those wheels going as slow as possible, well, there's first gear.
Well, yeah. There is,
but there's too much power when you just let up the clutch in first gear, and the wheel, because there's a lot of power, think about this. If you were walking across that frozen Charles River in Watertown
right. In
the winter, would you run?
Damn,
you'd fall
right
on your butt if you tried to run.
You'd get some pretty bad diseases in that river. You know?
Exactly. But if you were trying to walk across and it were frozen,
no, but
trying to walk across and it wasn't frozen, you'd have a problem.
No, but
if it were frozen,
saying...
you'd walk very, very slowly. So that you want the wheels to start off very, very... And think about how you do it. You want the tires to do what your feet would be doing
right. Walking
across that river.
But his argument is very simply, the wheels turn, for a given engine RPM, the
right. Wheels
turn their slowest in first gear.
Yes. And the truth is that starting off in second gear is just a surrogate for being able to really, really do it slowly in first gear, which most people are not capable of.
Mm.
So if you could control the clutch and the gas correctly, first gear is okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To tell you the truth, I don't have that problem with the four-wheel drive Audi, but still, it's one of these nagging issues that have been bothering me since time immemorial.
Well, I mean, you're right, and if it is a Newton's fifth law, I'm going to look up the first four and see if there is one that he left out. I mean, he couldn't have thought of everything.
I think that.
Thanks, Seth.
Okay, thank you.
See ya.
Talk to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, look, before we get to the new puzzler, and I know you can't wait, we have to take a short break.
I have to admit that I've never liked the fact that we take a break during this part of the show. I think it sends the wrong message to the listeners.
Yeah? Well, what message would that be?
Well, that the radio station sounds so much better when we're not talking.
They already know that. We'll be back with more of your calls and a brand new puzzler in just a minute, so don't go away.
Now, I might have to change a tire or glue the mirror back on. The radio, it always works, but stations might be gone. Sometimes I gotta smack the dash when I turn on the lights. Sometimes I just roll down the windows, drive around all night. Love my car, it's a beater with a heater. Don't go fast, but I never was a speeder. If
And even though elephants try really hard to forget whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.
Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and as promised, the second in the series of matchstick puzzles.
Oh, yeah. So where is the puzzler presentation squad? Da, 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 da. Okay, yeah.
Oh, here it is. In contrast to last week's puzzler, this one's very brief.
Yeah, this is part of the set.
Get out your matchsticks.
Get out your matchsticks.
Okay.
Yeah.
And make with your matchsticks the following Roman numeral.
Yeah.
7, which is V-I-I.
V-I-I.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then an equal sign. Two more matchsticks.
Equals.
Equals I, one matchstick. So the equation reads 7 equals 1.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, as was the case with the other puzzler like this, you must move one matchstick and make this
an equation.
Right, a valid equation. And you cannot make the equal sign again an unequal sign. So you can't say 6, for example, does not equal 1. Now, there are...
Nor can you touch the equal sign. All you can touch are the matchsticks making up the number 7, V-I-I, and the matchstick making up the 1, the I. Is
exactly.
Yeah.
Now, I'll admit, there are two possible solutions. One, our producer, Doug Berman, came up with a few weeks ago, and that one we all considered bogus. And then there is the creative one.
Yeah.
Which is the one that we'll accept.
Okay.
Because the creative one, you're going to admit, is pretty good.
I can't remember the answer. Oh man.
Huh?
Yo.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
That is good.
That's pretty good. So I just as a write-off for my brother, he forgot it from last week. Anyway. If you think you know the answer, how to make 7 equal to 1, write that on the back of a $20 bill and send it to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our Fair City.
MAC 02238. Or you can email your answer to us from cartalk.com. If you'd like to call us, the number is 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name is Shanti. I'm calling from Washington, D.C.
Shanti?
That's right.
S-H-A-N-T-I?
S-H-A-N-T-H-I.
T-H-I.
Shanti.
And you're calling from where?
Washington.
Oh, are you a politician or a lawyer?
No, not at all.
Are you related to a politician or a lawyer?
In fact, I'm not.
Great, Shanti. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Same here.
What's up?
Well, let's see. I've been living in D.C. for a couple years, and I've been traveling around by metro, basically, including commuting to work.
Mm-hmm.
But that's started to get to become a drag. And so now I'm ready to buy a car, just that I have no place to park this car because I live in an apartment building, and there's just limited parking. And so I've been on this wait list for several months now. It seems to be very slow to turn over.
I just thought of an ideal solution to your problem. Without even, I mean, well, it just came to me. You know how these things just come to you?
Apparently, they must just come to you.
Here's what you do. Instead of buying this car yourself, you want to go into partnership with someone. You must demand that this person work nights. So when you get home, you pull up to the front door, he gets in the car, takes it to work.
You know, I actually, curiously enough, I have a neighbor who actually works in my apartment
Here
building
we go.
And doesn't live. And so I thought I could apply that load factor principle.
Well, I want you to realize that none of my brother's neighbors speak to him anymore.
They used to.
And it all pretty much ended with, "Hi, you must be the new guy in the neighborhood." And he would say, "Yeah, I'm Tom." And that was just about the end of it for most of them.
Yeah, they don't want to talk to me. I don't know why.
I've tried talking to mine. Some of them complain that I play my music too loud. But
yeah, well,
the hell of
them. That's my attitude.
So I thought if anyone could come up with some creative ideas, it would be you guys.
I mean, you've exhausted all possibilities?
What kind of a car are you buying?
Well, I'm thinking of maybe an Accord or maybe a Passat. Do you have any thoughts on that either?
Oh, I have some thoughts on that.
Okay, I'm ready to hear them.
I'd buy the Passat.
Is that right?
Only because the Honda Accord is probably the most boring vehicle. You will age 15 or 20 years just by driving that thing for a week.
I've test driven the Passat so far, and that was actually pretty fun, I must admit.
Yeah, the Passat is fun.
What's fun about it?
I don't know.
I mean, quite honestly, I haven't had fun driving a car in about 25 years.
No kidding.
No, I mean, I can think of about 5 million other things I'd rather be doing.
When you drive, do you sit in the front seat or the back seat?
I try to sit in the back.
Yeah, that's fun.
Maybe I've kind of lost my perspective.
You've lost your joie de vivre, man.
Yeah, I mean,
you're getting old.
I view driving as a necessity to get from point A to point B.
That's a good point, but given that it has to be done, shouldn't we take whatever we can to make it just a little more exciting? Okay,
yeah.
I'm going with the Passat. I'm very excited about that.
Okay, the Passat's good. Yeah, you have our ringing endorsement.
But we haven't solved your problem. I went through the same thing. I used to live in one of the suburbs, sort of end of the city areas here around Boston called Brookline.
I'm well aware of it. It was a
wonderful place. I mean, everything was right nearby, shopping. I could hop on the train and be in downtown Boston in 8 minutes. And I had a car. And you had to use the car sometimes because sometimes you're not going to downtown Boston. You're going some other direction. But again, there was no place to park it. So that if you went, like, supermarket shopping, you'd pull up in front of the apartment building and double park and put on the flashes. The police would come while you were upstairs with
your groceries.
Six bags of groceries balanced on your nose. And it was impossible. If you parked it on the street, they would come and steal. I mean, it was horrible. And there was only one solution to this.
And that was?
I had to move.
Right.
That's what's happened to the world. You get the car because you have to have it, and then you no longer stay where you were.
Because you don't have to be there.
Because you don't have to be there, so you move further away, which means you have to have the car, and then you got to have two of them. Because that's the end of the world.
If one breaks, you can't get to where you have to be. If you have to be there, you can't depend on a car that might not be dependable.
So, I mean, if I had to give you advice, it would be don't buy the damn car.
Really?
We don't need all the cars we have. If you really want a car, come up here. I'll give you mine. I'm sick of it. We don't need cars. We have more cars than people, for God's sakes.
Oh, but all those people that drive me around right now, they're not happy with this advice you're giving
me. Dump them. Get new friends. Yeah, they won't know you're a mooch for at least 6 months or a year. Yeah. You just keep moving on.
It is a good benchmark. You know, it's a good measure of how good the friends are.
Good point.
And if they're not friendly, the friends enough to schlep you around, then you don't need them.
Right.
And don't forget that you can rent a car from time to time.
True enough. It's just that the first time I did that, I got right into a wreck.
Oh, that's okay. Better their car than yours.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's your solution.
Yeah.
My
don't buy the car.
Don't buy it. Rent.
We have too many people with cars. We don't need any more cars. And you'll have much more fun on the metro. You'll meet people. You'll see people. You'll have time to meditate. You'll have time to read books, which you can't do, or shouldn't do at least, when you're driving.
Do they still not allow eating and drinking in the subways?
Oh, my gosh, no. And I got a ticket for that on the metro.
Do you know that our producer, Doug Berman, almost got a ticket for doing the same thing?
Yeah, he was
on the platform, and he was there drinking a coffee and munching on a bagel.
Exactly what I was doing.
And a woman came over to him and asked to see his identification. And he was just about to give the identification when a scuffle broke out at the far end of the platform. And coincidentally, the train shows up.
So he was able to escape.
He jumps on the train and escapes.
He is now a fugitive from justice. I mean, we're ready.
We're ready to turn him in.
Bounty hunters. If there was a reward on this guy's head, we'd have him down there shackled to the axle of a Honda Accord right now.
I'll see what I can do to raise awareness and interest.
All right. Well, tell him we're ready to extradite.
Okay.
Good luck, Shanti.
Thank you so much.
Your money doing something else. Avoid the car as long as you can. It's a horrible trap. It really is.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
See ya.
Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye. Enjoy the Passat.
Thank you.
See you later. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're at Car Talk.
Hi, guys. This is Steve from Montour Falls, New York.
Steve from Niagara Falls? Where?
Montour Falls.
Montour.
M-O-N-T-O-R?
T-O-U-R. Montour.
Montour.
That's right. It's about it's north of Elmira and it's west of Ithaca.
It's way out in the boondocks, though, isn't it?
It is. It is. I drive to Ithaca to work. That's where I am now.
Yeah.
But the problem came actually when I was driving back from Ithaca one night. My girlfriend and I had escaped the boonies to go to a cultured folk concert in Ithaca.
Yeah.
And we're driving past, but on the way back, out in the boonies, halfway between the boonies and the cultured city of Ithaca, there's a topless bar.
Uh-huh.
And conveniently, the car breaks down right there.
And it's amateur night.
Great.
No.
Yeah.
And it's late at night, it's dark, and I see this thing in front of me. It looks like a large, black, round object, like a bowling ball.
Wow, yeah.
And I had no time to swerve, so I just ran right over it, not with the tires, but under the car.
Uh-huh.
I heard this incredible grinding noise.
Oh.
And so I don't want to slam on the brakes because I fear I might skid or something, so I just gradually slow down and pull off to the side of the road. About 100 yards down the road, we finally stop, grinding all the way. And we hear something go crashing off into the bushes.
Mm-hmm.
So we get out of the car.
Mm-hmm.
And we hear laughter coming from in front of the topless bar, like a bunch of drunken guys, you know.
Ah, okay.
So, we're not going to go looking in the bushes in the dark, but we drive back to the topless bar. By the time we get back there, they've all gone inside, and I don't want to go in there and say, hey, who threw a bowling ball out in the road? So we just drive on. We find a bunch of big pieces of black plastic that came off the bottom of the car in the road.
Hmm. Black plastic.
Black plastic.
Okay.
The next day, my girlfriend's going back that way. She stops at that same spot, goes down into the bushes, and picks up a black bowling ball.
Of course.
Scarred, probably an inch deep scar the whole way around it.
So they had actually put a bowling ball in the road and stood there to see who would hit it.
Not only that, it was on a hillside, so they couldn't have just put the bowling ball in the road.
They had to prop
it up.
They
had to actually roll it out there.
How did they actually get the ball to stay there in the road?
Well, they bowled it, and they timed it. They heard the car coming. They heard Steve coming around the mountain, so to speak.
Yeah.
And they timed it. Maybe they had a whole truck full of bowling balls, and they were just, by successive approximations.
Right. You might have been the 14th or 15th car.
Well, there is an actual automotive question that comes out of this.
I'm sure.
In the morning when you go out, you put it into drive, and it doesn't go anywhere. Just occasionally, it doesn't go anywhere. But you put it into reverse, it's an automatic. You put it into reverse, and then it backs up, and then when you put it in drive, it's okay.
And
so I'm worried that I damaged the transmission somehow with this bowling ball.
And this happened, what, a day or two after?
Well, it just happened sort of irregularly, and I can't say exactly how much longer after, but I have another theory, too. It may be the bowling ball, but I've also, I know you're going to laugh at this.
Steve!
I used to coast down the hills, put it into neutral, and coast down hills to save gas.
Uh huh,
Steve.
And I'm sure I've heard you guys say once that was not a good thing to do, but I was doing it.
Steve.
And I don't do it anymore. But I'm worried that somebody told me that if you do that, some part doesn't get lubricated.
No, it had nothing to do with it.
Really?
Yeah, had nothing to do with it. And I don't think the bowling ball had anything to do with it either. But it could have.
It could have. I've been trying to guess what kind of a car you have. My first guess was a Honda.
It's a Mazda. 323.
Yeah, same number of letters, ends of the vowel, same vowel.
They're both made in Japan.
Same car.
That's it.
Good guess, Frank!
You guys nailed it.
He did nail it, didn't he? No, it's possible that when you hit the bowling ball might have done something, crushing the transmission cover, maybe making a small leak, which in turn would lead to exactly the problem that you have.
Right. I mean, you could have
leaking transmission fluid.
What? You could have the ball could have made contact with the transmission oil pan, in which case it could have, I suppose, dented in the transmission oil pan, done damage to the valve body of the transmission, or caused a leak,
right,
or both.
Sure. But I don't think that happened.
Well, I haven't.
And if
seen
this happened, weeks. If this really did happen, you're gonna have to go back and beat up those bikers at the at the topless bar.
Yeah, you're gonna have to just start lifting weights and go in there some night and just
how much
knock
you how much you
over.
Weigh,
the bowling ball in my hand and say,
yeah, have the
the evidence,
the scarred remains of the bowling ball, And just go in there and you drop that baby on the floor. I can see the movie that's being...
Oh, I can see... No,
I can
wait a
see
minute.
The morons in Hollywood working on it right now.
You have to go in and lock the door behind you so that nobody
can
leave.
Exactly.
And they say, all right.
See whose fingers fit into the holes.
Right, exactly.
Ooh, that's going to be interesting. Let me know when you do it. Because
we'll
come by.
We'll send you a card in the hospital.
It's not going to happen.
Good luck, Steve.
Thanks a lot.
Don't go down that road again.
All right.
Stay home. See ya.
Bye-bye.
Wow. I got to make an observation.
Yeah.
It had to have been a pretty lousy topless bar if the guys are outside throwing bowling balls down the street. I mean... Oh, boy, oh, boy. Well, look, it's happened again. You've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are David the Calves of Belleville Green and Catherine Frau Blucher Fenelosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mayor, assisted by Connie Bridgeford. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. Our theme music is by David Dog Grisman. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor.
Yeah.
Just back from the East Granada, enchilada, fresh ciabatta, empanada, cheese frittata, calamata, beef tostada, carne asada, ice salada, and pina colada free lunch armada is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Heywood Jabuzoff. Our personal makeup artist is Bud Tugley. Our second shift meteorologist is cloudy overnight. Our windshield wiper replacement team is Ike and Zeke Learly. Oh, boy. Our staff orthopedist is Denise Hoyt. Our furnace repairman is Levon Coates. Our director of top secret strategy is Donatella Nobody. The pre-recorded portions of today's show were selected by staff librarian Albin Heard Before. Our Russian chauffeur is Bikoff and Dropoff. And our seat cushion tester is Mike Easter. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the frostbitten leprechauns in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. Don't drive like my brother.
Don't drive like my brother. And my sister wants to come on the show and say, don't drive like either of my brothers, because she doesn't trust us.
There's a story in this which we'll have to tell next week. We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1411, download classic Car Talk episodes, and check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com.
Also this week at cartalk.com, tips on how to be a great customer to your mechanic.
Yeah, first, come unarmed.
Right. Pack nothing but your gold card and a sky-high credit limit.
Do we have any real suggestions?
We do. Our tips on how to be a great customer are available all week at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though listeners wing their morning edition coffee mugs at their Garrison Keillor bobbleheads whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.